America, from America, time to stump the expert. Each week at this time, H.J. Heinz Company, maker of the famous Heinz 57 varieties, presents Information Please. Each week, four experts try to answer your questions. Send them to Information Please at 570 Lexington Avenue, New York 22, New York. We may edit them a bit, and in case of similarity, you'll have to accept our decision as to who shall be paid. Any question used brings you, courtesy of H.J. Heinz Company, $10 in war stamps and a copy of the Encyclopedia Britannica World Atlas. If we muff the question, you get $57 in war bonds and stamps and a set of the Encyclopedia Britannica. All questions remain our property. Information Please is presented under the supervision of Dan Golenpaw. Now, here's our master of ceremonies, Clifton Fadiman.
Ladies and gentlemen, our spontaneous and unrehearsed program continues as ever this evening with two of our three musketeers, the pianist and composer Oscar Levant and the lyricist Franklin Pierre. Unavoidable circumstances prevent Mr. Kieran from being with us this evening, but we're happy to welcome in his stead our old friend, the eminent playwright and producer of Life with Father fame, Mr. Russell Crouch. Our special guest is the chairman of the United States Maritime Commission and Warshipping Administrator, Admiral Emery S. Land. I know that Admiral Land would want us to say a word or two about the gallant merchant mariners, and we're just as anxious as he is to have it said. The merchant marine is making a special recruiting drive nowadays to get men, qualified men, back to sea. The invasion underlies the necessity of keeping those ships moving. If you've been to sea, or just like boats, you can apply at any merchant marine recruiting and manning office. How's that, Admiral? Okay?
Well,
thank you. Now we're going to begin with a question from Eleanor Meek of Indianapolis, Indiana. Let's get two out of three if we can. What is the obligatory first action when a Muslim enters a mosque? When a person of the Mohammedan faith enters a mosque, what's the first thing that he has to do, Mr. Levant?
He's not allowed to face something, and he's supposed to kneel at the same time, I think.
I don't think that's the first thing he has to do, though, Admiral Land.
Take off his shoes.
Take off his shoes, yes. How do you happen to know that, Admiral? Have you ever...
Darren was whispering to me.
I didn't know they wore shoes.
Oh, yeah. Yes, they do. Adams, you may be getting help the other way before the evening is over. I'll have to call that wrong. It came in a little too fast on that, Oscar. How about this? What's the first action that's obligatory when a sailor goes aboard a ship?
What's the first thing he has to do? Under land.
Salute the deck.
Salute the quarter. Yes, and what's the second thing he has to do?
Speak the officers of the deck, kneel below.
Officer of the day, yes. How about the first thing that a player has to do when he enters a football game? Mr. Levant.
He has to report to the referee.
That's absolutely right. Well, that gets us two out of three and sends us on to this question from Isadora M. Mackler of New York City. Let's get all on this, shall we, gentlemen? What would be the background of a naval or military officer who was characterized as a Mustang? M-U-S-T-A-N-G. Admiral Ant.
From the news point of view, he was not a graduated Naval Academy. He came up through the ranks.
Yes. And a particular reason for calling him that? A Mustang? It's a sort of wild horse, isn't it? Perhaps improperly trained, Annapolis men might say.
How about the opposite number in Maverick, I suppose? One being a horse and the other being the bovine construction.
I might be at that, Admiral. Now, how about the background of an officer who might speak out as a retread? A retread. Has any of you heard that phrase recently?
I've heard it, but that's about all.
Very good book was written by an old soldier who calls himself a retread. I think he calls a book by that name. Well, it's a commissioned officer who's taken up a commission held in the First War. Does that make it clear, Mr. Adams? Okay.
You mean he was in the First War and he's been retreaded and is back in this one?
That's it. That's
you
right.
You didn't give me a chance to say that. I was going to guess that.
Well, I will wait another 5 or 6 minutes next time, Mr. Crown. Give you a shot at it. What's a 90-day wonder? A 90-day wonder, Mr. Crouch.
That's in Admiral Land's Navy. It's a quickly trained naval officer who doesn't go to the Naval Academy, who is trained in 90 days, and the sailors don't like them very much.
Is that right, Admiral?
I didn't know it was particularly concerned with me. It was a general wonder.
I thought so, too. It's a product of officers' training school. They turn out.
The quick officers.
Turn them out in 90 days and pretty well, too. Well, that gives us 2 out of 3. Try this one. That wasn't enough. We didn't muff one on that. That's the Heinz 57 sent $57 in war bonds and stamps to Mr. Mackler and a set of the Britannic. Try this, gentlemen, from Josephine Chambers in New York City. Here are some quotations, all of which use the word forever. What's the source of these forevers? Get 2 out of 3. The first is, and if forever, still forever. Mr. Adams.
Fairly well.
That's right. Whom is it from?
Byron.
Byron is right. Very good. Do you always work with Adams this way, Adams? Yes, Byron, fairly well, and if forever, still forever, fairly well. Don't be afraid of coming in ahead of Mr. Adams. How about this? Now and forever. Famous phrase. What's the source of it, Mr. Adams?
Now and forever hold thy peace.
That is a good admonition, though not on this program, but I don't think that's the one I was... I wasn't...
forever after, anyway, isn't it?
Yeah, I think now and forever after hold thy peace. So. How about this? Liberty and union, now and forever, one and inseparable. That's the one I was after, and that's from what? Famous speech, gentlemen. Come, we should know that. Mr. Adams?
I think that was said by Andrew Jackson.
Pick another orator.
No. I would pick Jefferson before that, and I would be wrong.
Yes, that's true.
Abby Henry.
Mr. Lincoln, I would say.
No, good gracious, gentlemen.
Well, it isn't Harding, that I know.
No. Daniel Webster's second speech on foot resolution, January 26, 1830. Don't you remember Daniel Webster? Liberty and union, now and forever, one and inseparable. That gives us one wrong.
There wasn't in the picture about Daniel Webster.
I often wonder how you got the education you have.
It costs a lot of money to go to pictures.
They ought to give you a fellowship. Permanent chair, so to speak. Forever is a long, long time. Gentlemen, what's that from? Forever is a long, long time. Miss Cross says
it's from a song.
It is indeed. Quite right. What one? Forever is a long, long time.
It is right now.
It's forever. Why are you waiting?
I'll have to have you give me the name of the song and the... Oh, Mr. Adams... And
Forever is a long, long time is the name of the song.
That's correct. Very good. Who wrote it?
I don't know. It was on the... It's comparatively recent.
For you, perhaps.
I never heard of it.
Albert von Tilzer.
Well, that's pretty long ago.
Well, that's...
Not for Adams, it isn't.
Even for Adams, I
think. Gentlemen, I think we ought to get the... got the complete authority on that. Forever is... A, what did you say? Forever is a long, long time. Is it a gag, Mr. Adams?
No, I said the song.
I see. And you meant that was the answer to the question?
Yes.
All right. Okay. Don't bluff me, that's all. You're outsmarted me. That gives us 2 out of 3. Here's one from Bernard Sable of Philadelphia. This, I think you should get all on, gentlemen, and it is a musical question. But it is one on which others beside Mr. Levant, I think, ought to be able to come in.
I'd like to come in on it, too.
That's all right. What is the occupation of each of the persons who sings these songs? That's all. What's its occupation? Let's have the first. I beg your pardon?
Sir.
What rank?
I think he was an admiral,
wasn't he? Yes, yes, yes. You wouldn't be afraid of a little self-plugging on this program. Yes, what admiral was it, Admiral Land?
He's Admiral KCB.
Yes, Admiral Porter KCB. KCB, yes. What is
KCB? Tom Pinafore.
Tom Pinafore, yes, that's
for KCB.
You can slug Adams any time.
The man of the bath.
What is it? What is it? Not
the man of the bath.
You know too much, Admiral. How about this, the next one? Occupation of the person who sings that song. Mr. Levant?
Maudit.
Mademoiselle Maudit, yeah.
From Christy Chef.
No, it's Christy Chef. I'm an
osculator. I beg your pardon?
An osculator.
Why, he's a milliner. Mr. Maudit and Admiral Lane is wrong. She's not from 50 Chef. 50 Chef is from Madame Maudit.
Well, she was a Maudit. Anyway, you and the Admiral agree on that, and apparently led pretty much the same
thing. Well, 50's still around. The Maudit is dead.
Now, Mr. Adams, I want to get back to this osculator, this mysterious osculator. Why do you say that?
Because it's Kissy again.
Oh, I...
That's not a perfection so far, is it?
It is in my family.
Is took a long time to develop that gag, but better ask you late than never.
Well,
don't like it, go home.
What is the...
That's all for me?
You're here on contract. Now the third, Mr. Pond. Mr. Levant's the only one who's been around on this one.
Well, is it a bum or a gigolo? Which is it?
It's a gigolo, as you say. And what's the song?
Just a gigolo. I sing like one.
Like Cole Porter.
Urban Caesar, I
think. No, so far. Caesar wrote the American version of the lyrics. It's actually a European song, and they had other lyrics in Europe. Yeah, that was before you could afford to go to Europe.
All new to me. Now, gentlemen, how about trying this? It comes from William M. Hawk of Denver, Colorado. Can you recite for us some lines of poetry or song that mention three chores performed by a housewife? Well, you know what a housewife does, Mr. Kraft.
You mean kitchen chores?
Many kind of chores.
Would you take the national anthem? Or say, can you see?
Oh, say, can you?
Can.
I get it. Yeah. I look forward to that. Very good.
I will take it.
Mr. Levant?
So little time. So.
Subtle stuff, very subtle stuff. Mr. Krause.
A Gershwin song, Love is Sweeping the Country?
That's a very good one. Love is Sweeping the Country.
Polish up the handle at a big front door.
Polish up the handle, polishing?
Sure.
You were getting good on this, Mr. Levant?
Needles and pins, the man's troubles begin when he gets married. How does that go?
If the man's married, his troubles begin.
Yeah, sure. A graceful sentiment, but I don't think it mentions an actual
What's
sure.
the matter with pins and needles? Don't you use them?
Yeah.
You use needles, I'll tell you that.
All right, you win. Out argue me on that.
Weep no more, my lady.
That's right. You've been working on that all evening, Mr. Adams. Very good. Weep no more, my lady. How about this one, gentlemen, from Miss Judith Dube of Brooklyn, New York? An interesting question. Get 2 out of 3. The following ship took part in the invasion of France. Can you tell on what previous occasion each of them was prominent in the news? In other words, each of them had been prominent before the invasion took place for some other reason. For what reason? The first ship is the War Spite. The War Spite, what did it do that was famous, Mr. Levant?
I think it aided in the landing of Salerno.
Absolutely right. Shelling of Salerno, yes. Very good. A British battleship. Excellent memory, Mr. Levan. How about the Ajax? The Ajax achieved fame before it took part in the present invasion. Mr. Crown?
I'll take a wild guess.
All right.
Didn't it help in the sinking of the Scharnhorst?
You've got the wrong ship.
Well,
the Bismarck.
No, I don't
know. No, wait a minute.
I may be wrong.
The one down the south.
That's the Scharnhorst.
That's the Gneisenau.
Gneisenau?
The one down off South America.
I wish you two boys would stop playing in the U.S.
Not the Admiral Tirpitz.
No, the one off South America.
Grass Bay.
Grass Bay.
Why didn't you say that about a half hour ago?
Right off line of a day.
I said plenty of times.
I've got Admiral fright.
I can see the Admiral doesn't have Krauss fright. How about the ship Nevada? Nevada was famous, Mr. Levant?
Just now, last Tuesday morning... It's a battleship which was in the forerunner of the invasion in Normandy.
Agreed.
And it also was sunk on November 6th at Pearl Harbor.
Yes.
It almost sunk. It was rehabilitated, or whatever the word is.
That's exactly right.
It's December.
December 7th.
November
7th, yes.
Well,
it was raised.
When is election day, I guess?
Matter of fact, it's had a very gallant career. It was raised in February 42 and it shelled Attu in April 1943 for 4 days.
I didn't know that.
In the invasion. Well, that gives us 2 out of 3. You're pretty good on these boats, Mr.
Well, they're always in time and Newsweek.
Nice work. I see you play no favor. Eunice Allen of Beverly, Massachusetts, sends this one in. Again, this is a musical question and we should get all gentlemen. Each of these musical experts should suggest to you a kind of ship. That is the title of it, should. Let's have the first. Mr. Levant had his hand up at once on that.
Well, that's in the Franklin Pierce Adams vintage. That's a gondola.
Why do you say that? That's correct.
It's a barker roll, and therefore it has to rollick slowly, leisurely, and boringly, and away.
Now, all we have to have is what the barker roll is about.
It's the tales of how
the house is. Well, Admiral Land, were you going to tell the...
Ask the Admiral who wrote it.
Who wrote it?
I don't know.
Oh, I thought he knew. Offenbach.
Well, there you are. You don't have to know who wrote it, Admiral. That's all right.
So it happens to be my favorite. I ought to know.
It happens to be your favorite?
Well, now it's by Offenbach.
All right.
And now he's Offenbach.
Try this, gentlemen. Let's have the next one, Mr. Fox. Mild satisfaction on Mr. Krause's face.
That's Mississippi Steamboat.
Oh, no.
Is it?
Why
no.
Not?
Why not?
Oh, yeah. I thought he meant the name of the song.
Well,
I mean the boat is
suggested. I suggest they...
Robert E. Lee.
River Steamer.
Yes, waiting for the Robert E. Lee.
Yeah,
that's my vintage.
Well, that's correct, Mr. Krause. Very good. Now the third and last. What kind of ship does that suggest to you? What class, perhaps? Mr. Crow.
A battleship.
Why?
Because battleships are named after states, and that's Texas.
Perfect answer. Perfect answer. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Battleship, deep in the heart of Texas. Very good. Try this one from Jeannie Edwards of Milton, Iowa. Each of the following was the famous friend of a more famous hero of history or fiction. Who was the hero? You see, I'm going to give you the friend.
No.
You give me the number one guy. I guess you got two out of three. Joe Harper is the friend. Who's the more famous hero of whom he was the friend? Joe Harper? Joe Harper, Mr. LeBanc?
Yes, sir. Yes, because nobody else... That sounds awfully Merriwell-ish to me.
Keep going.
Huh?
Keep going. I'd like to see how your mind works.
Well, if it isn't... I mean, this is not an X-ray program, you know. It's either I'm wrong or I'm right, and my mind has nothing to do with it.
Too late.
My mind's a closed book.
Too late to defend your mind now, Mr. LeBanc. No, it isn't a Merriwell.
Well, then I'm wrong.
Not too bad. Now we can have wild guesses.
That was like Mark Twain to me.
That's right, Mr. Adams. Keep going.
I think it's Huckleberry Finn.
Well, it's the other one.
Tom Sawyer.
How about one of the toughest things that has ever happened to information, please, is the fact that Mark Twain wrote two famous books about boys. Tom Sawyer is the more famous friend of Joe Harper. That gives us one wrong. Now, Cuthbert Collingwood is a friend, was a friend, of a more famous hero. This might be true history rather than fiction. Cuthbert Collingwood. Admiral, this is really more or less up your alley, or one of your alleys. I speak of naval history.
Well, as famous as Admiral Collingwood.
Well, he was an admiral. There was an Admiral Collingwood, but he was a friend of an even more famous person than himself.
Martin.
That's quite right. Don't be modest, Admiral. It doesn't say on this show.
I was going to get it.
Yes, Nelson. Collingwood was present at the Battle of Trafalgar.
That's
no
right.
Friend of Nelson in the service.
Yes,
right, Admiral?
Yes, sir.
Very good. And now the third and last. Tonto, T-O-N-T-O, is the famous friend of a more
what?
Famous... Tonto, T-O-N-T-O.
It's somebody's aunt, is it?
How about a wild guess on that? We've got to get this one right, gentlemen. Well, he's the Indian friend of the Lone Ranger. Mr. Adams, don't you know the Lone Ranger?
And the Lone Ranger isn't really lone?
Not really lone. He's got Tonto with him all the time. Heinz 57 sends $57 in war bonds and stamps, Mr. Edwards, and a set of the Britannic. That was a nice stump. I enjoyed that. Try this one from Miss Jewel L. Fisher of Brooklyn, New York. What danger, gentlemen, do sailors and navigators have to avoid in the center of the North Atlantic eddy? There's a danger that they have to avoid in the center of the North Atlantic eddy. Adams, this is probably the first time you've heard of this particular eddy.
Well, that's a very good eddy.
This is a very bad eddy. Mr. Krause, you're a yeoman, second class from the last war. Did you learn nothing in school?
That's right. Is that off Nova Scotia?
No. As a matter of fact...
Is it the iceberg?
No, I think you're quite a way off, Admiral.
Reef.
Beg pardon?
Reef. That's a smoke.
No reef.
Well, is it sailing danger or...
It's a sailing danger, yes.
Oh, that's
the Sargasso Sea.
The Sargasso Sea.
Tell us about the Sargasso Sea, Admiral. What is it?
Well, it's an area after a storm where there's plenty of waves but no wind, and you simply roll and pitch and don't move forward or aft.
Well, isn't there a lot of seaweed around?
Seaweed all around collected as a result of the tornado or hurricane. Yeah.
Actually, last weekend. Actually, this Sargasso Sea is not as dangerous as it used to be cooked up to be, but...
It's a sailing ship's only.
It is dangerous to sailing ships only. I guess we count that wrong. That's a nice clean myth. Now, what danger do sailors and navigators have to avoid? Near Moskenes Island off Norway. And I beg pardon if I mispronounce the name. Moskenes, M-O-S-K-E-N-A-E-S.
Herring? There's a lot of herring around.
Is this I'm doing the war, or is this...
No, just generally. A permanent danger.
You had three dangers during the war over there, from air, submerged, and surface.
No, this is a lot
of rocks. There's rocks and tides.
No, it won't bite you.
It's a particular current called a maelstrom.
Well, it's a byproduct of the ghost stream.
What's the difference between an eddy and a maelstrom?
You better ask the admiral what the difference is between the eddy and a maelstrom. Well, there's a strong current known as the maelstrom around these islands, and there are tales of ships being swallowed up by the swirl pool, but I guess that isn't true. You've been up around that section, haven't you, Mr. Claus?
Never ran into a maelstrom in my life.
Well, in that case you ever do, you'll know how to talk to it. Now, how about...
Really not swallowed up, anyhow.
What danger do sailors and navigators have to avoid off the northeastern coast of Australia? This is not a fabled danger, but a real one. Off the northeastern coast of Australia, Adam, you were right before. How about coming up with...
Reef! Adam! Reef!
Reefs are right. Yes, coral reefs that extend many hundreds of miles over at a distance of 20 to 70 miles off the coast. Times 57 cents, $57 in all bonds and stamps, Fisher, and a set of the Britannica.
We missed that one, cute.
Yes, you did that.
Great way to start the bond drive, though.
Isn't it a good way to start? Try this one, gentlemen, from Esther Reed of East St. Louis, Illinois. Get 2 out of 3. Who or what is loved in these lines? I'll quote some lines for you all about love. She loved me for the dangers I had passed. Who loved whom? For the dangers, Mr. Adams.
It might have been Desdemona.
It was indeed, Mr. Adams. And she was in love with?
Old W. Fellow,
yeah. That's the first time I've ever seen him, that name, Irish. Othello it is, of course, who speaks the famous line, she loved me for the dangers I had passed, and I loved her that she did pity them. This only is the witchcraft I have used. What, who or what is loved in these lines? Beloved from pole to pole. What is beloved from pole to pole, Mr. Adams, again?
Sleep.
That's quite right, Mr. Adams.
Oh, sleep, it is a blessed thing, beloved from pole to pole.
You're quoting from what point?
I'm quoting from the rhyme of the ancient mariner.
Certainly are. You're working at all cylinders this evening, Mr. Adams. And how about this one? With a love that was more than love, who or what is loved? With a love that was more than love, our love expert, Mr. Adams. What a monopoly.
Annabelle Reed. I and my Annabelle
Reed. Yes. We loved with a love that was more than love, and you're quoting from
Annabelle Reed.
Who wrote it?
E.A. Paul.
Good enough.
Yes. Esquire.
Good enough.
The Annabelle Reed, I know, doesn't go that way.
What, Dad? Do you know an Annabelle
Reed? That was probably in a movie.
No, it wasn't.
I never knew of another Annabelle Reed.
Yeah, who's wonderful? Who's marvelous? Just Annabelle Reed.
Never knew that. Is that right, Miss Adams? You ever heard that?
Never heard it.
We used to sing it in Boston.
Well, that gives us 3 out of 3. All of them, by the way, got by Mr. Adams. That's perfect catching. Try this one from Robert C. Tracy of Washington, D.C. What was the origin of these words in relation to ships? Here are various terms that we use constantly in connection with ships. What do they originally mean? The first word is bilge. We all know what we mean when we say bilge. Admiral, how did that term arise?
The byproduct of getting the bottom of the ship is analogous to what we'd find in the sewer, I think, and that's why it's known as bilge.
Yes, but how did the term come about? That's correct. That's what bilge is. Now, it's a funny word, bilge.
It might have come about from some part of the ship failing and leaking. That's what it means in nerve academy. It means to flunk an examination.
To build?
Yeah.
Means to flunk out?
Flunk out of the academy is to build.
That's so. I didn't know that. I don't think that's the origin of it. The word build originally comes from the word bulge. And the bulge is that portion of the underwater body of the ship that lies between the flat of the bottom and the straight vertical topside, and only the admiral understands me when I say this. You won't follow me, Mr. Adams, do you?
No, sure.
I'm way behind myself. Internally, it's the lowest point of the hull adjacent to the keelson. Do you understand what that means, Mr. Admiral?
Well, that's what I said. It's the bottom part of the ship. And the
helmet. Oh, you began with that. You said it was the stuff that collects in it.
He knows what you're talking about, but you don't know what he's talking about.
Bilge water is the term used in Shakespeare. It was the foul water that collected at the bottom of the ship.
What I wanted to get at, Admiral, was that it came originally from the word bulge. That's how we get this odd word bilge. Now, we didn't really get that, so I'll have to count you. Not quite right. Now, how about the word log? We speak of a ship's log. What's the origin of that term?
That is the heaving of a lead, or heaving of a ship, which is called a log, that takes the speed of the ship. And it was made out of wood.
Yes.
And therefore, the term fit for a log.
Yes. And now it means, how do we use it now?
Well, it's the knot the ship makes per hour, no matter how it's taken, whether by revolutions or by heaving the log.
And more generally, it becomes a kind of diary of the ship's progress.
That is correct.
All listed in the log. Now, how about the word supercargo? What does that originally mean? How did that term come about? Well, gentlemen, it means in...
Somebody's excess of the cargo goes along, who's not really part of the crew.
Yes, in charge of cargo. That's quite right. Well, I think that's all we'll have time for, gentlemen. We got 2 out of 3 on that. That's all we'll have time for. Thank you, Admiral Land. And thank you, Russell Krauss, for the fine cooperation this evening. Tonight, Heinz 57 has paid out $171 in war bonds and stamps and 3 sets of the encyclopedia. Next week, Mr. Kiernan will be back with us, along with Mr. Adams, and we welcome as our guests Senator Alvin Barkley of Kentucky and Senator Harold Burton of Ohio. Also next Monday, over most of these stations, we invite you to listen to our radio neighbors, the DuPont Cavalcade of America, the Voice of Firestone, and the Bell Telephone Hour. Monday evening is good listening over NBC. Remember, send your questions and the correct answers to Information, Please, at 570 Lexington Avenue, New York, 22, New York. And now our Heinz reporter, Ben Grauer.
Now that the battle to determine the fate of civilization has been joined, what are you doing here at home? You, too, can enter the fight. Your war bond dollars and planes and tanks and guns and ships are needed to help crush the Axis. In this fifth war loan drive, buy all the war bonds you can. Make your contributions worthy of the men who are fighting for us all on the battlefronts of the world. Now, until next Monday evening at the same time, H.J. Heinz Company wishes you good health and good evening.
This is the National Broadcasting Company.